lift your head, we'll be sinner. The river's just ahead. Down the path of forgiveness, salvation's waiting there. You build a mighty fortress, 10,000 burdens high. Love is here to lift you up.
And it is another week. This is Andrew Wood with Hope Resource Center. Thank you so much for tuning in. I was not here last week. You might not have known that because the show still played. And if you're listening via podcast, you just, I guess, every now and then check, or maybe you're subscribed to our iTunes or Google Play or TuneIn app and you get notifications. But either way, we are glad that you found your way to listening to what I have to say. So, you know, what I have to say today is a whole lot because I was in St. Louis last week at a conference for pregnancy center folks, and it was, you know, 1,500, 2,000 people there all coming together to talk about the work that we do in the pregnancy center movement and how we are serving men and women across this country. Just an amazing opportunity to be together. I'm going to talk about that here in a little while, what that looks like and why that's important for us all to come together. But before I get into those things, over the last couple weeks, we have had a lot of information, a lot of folks talking about the abortion issue. And I know that I often talk about legislative issues. I often talk about what's being said on the news concerning abortion and life. Today, I'm gonna look at some of those things as well. Last week, if you were paying attention, and if you weren't paying attention, I can't say that I blame you. There was a town hall on CNN that was 7 hours long, and every presidential candidate running on the Democratic ticket talked about climate change. And I don't really know what else you would want to hear for 7 hours except folks talking about climate change. Folks that call us science deniers, that they themselves are not scientists, but they get on and tell us what's going on with the climate. And so they had a seven hour town hall on climate change. It wasn't necessarily a debate. They each had, I think, 45 minutes or so. If you were watching that, you saw where Joe Biden's eye mysteriously started filling up with blood. There's just a lot of weird things happening at that town hall. But one of the things that I wanted to talk about today, I have, I guess you could say, opinions on climate change, but that's not what I'm talking about today. What we're going to talk about is Bernie Sanders. Senator Sanders was asked a question from someone in the crowd, and the question was, with the way the climate is going, and they believe that climate change is an existential threat to our society. We've even had candidates say that it is our World War II. It's our generation's World War II. And if we don't combat it, the world as we know it could end in 12 years. Now, granted, they've been saying that for 30 years. But anyway, in 12 years, it could end. And so it was interesting in the question being posed to Senator Sanders, they asked about population control. And they brought up, for climate change, this is why I'm always skeptical when someone talks about the Green New Deal and climate change and the things that we need to put in place. The reason why I get so bent out of shape when people talk about those things is because if you wait a little bit, they'll go from climate change to abortion on demand. And so the question from the audience member was, because of climate change, and we need to make changes to fix this, shouldn't we have abortion be paid for by the state? Shouldn't we have abortion be paid for by taxpayer dollars? Shouldn't it be a thing that you can just go and get without any issue? Because after all, we need to curb this population growth that we're seeing, and we need to stop seeing people. You know, we don't need people on this planet, because it's people on this planet, in their estimation, that is ultimately killing the planet. And you know, what Senator Sanders could have said is, I appreciate your question on climate change. I don't think abortion should be a remedy for climate change. We shouldn't be ending the lives of innocent people because we think it may the temperature may be rising in certain parts of the globe. But instead, Senator Sanders stepped out and said what I thought he would say and said, yes, absolutely. I believe that abortion on demand is something that we need. I believe that women getting pregnant, especially, listen to this. He said, especially in poorer countries, we definitely need birth control and abortion in these poorer countries because they can't afford babies anyway. Now, why does that make this redhead's face get really red? It upsets me because that's eugenics. You know, we've had populations, we've had leaders that have walked this planet in years past that said there were certain demographics of society that we needed to get rid of. And it's funny to me that and funny not in ha-ha, but it's interesting to me that when he says go after the poorer countries are the ones that need birth control, the poorer countries are the ones that need abortion on demand. Why is that? We need less poor people? Where's the mindset behind that? And so there's an article over at National Review that goes into detail with this. Alexandra DeSantis is a writer over at National Review that if you are not following her and her everything that she writes has to do with life and abortion, and it is just on point every single time. And so this is her piece concerning Bernie Sanders and his advocating for population control in poor countries. And this, again, is over at National Review. He says, during the lengthy climate change town hall, Democratic candidates proposed a variety of increasingly absurd policies to address environmental issues. California Senator Kamala Harris, for instance, continued her theme of promising to arrogate unconstitutional power to herself as president, announcing that she would deal with supposed obstruction on climate change by abolishing the filibuster, and that's in the weeds of politics, if you don't know what that means. Entirely ignored during the course of the event was the fact that all seven senators running for president have signed on as co-sponsors of the Green New Deal in the Senate, but when it came to the floor, they refused to vote on it. Imagine that. So much for existential threat. The most outrageous comment, though, came from Senator Sanders, who responded to a question about population growth by expressing support for taxpayer-funded abortion in poor countries. And then here's his answer, okay? So I gave you a bit of what the question was. Here's his answer when it comes to population control via abortion on demand. Senator Sanders says, the answer is yes. And the answer has everything to do with the fact that women in the United States of America, by the way, have a right to control their own bodies and make reproductive decisions. The Mexico City Agreement, which denies American aid to those organizations around the world that allow women to have abortions or even get involved in birth control, to me, is totally absurd. This is Sanders talking. I think especially in poor countries around the world where women do not necessarily want to have large numbers of babies and where they can have the opportunity through birth control to control the number of kids they have. It's something I very, very strongly support. That's the end quote. Sanders isn't alone, of course. He's not alone in linking abortion rights to concerns about the climate. Some of the most ardent abortion rights activists routinely lament the choice to have children on the grounds that doing so is bad for the environment. Pro-abortion organizations, meanwhile, turn that unwarranted concern into a policy agenda, spending their resources foisting abortion and contraception on women in Africa, most of whom won't know part of it. You know, it's interesting to me. So I could go on forever. I'm not going to read all of that, but it's interesting to me. So not only is Senator Sanders saying that we need taxpayer-funded abortions in the United States of America, but did you catch what he said? We need to pay for the world's abortions. So when folks say that I'm extreme when it comes to my life position, well you're just so extreme. You're pro-life in every scenario. How could you be pro-life in every scenario? There's no wiggle room in there. So I'm extreme for saying that every individual has a right to life. Well, if that's extreme, so be it. But what bugs me is you didn't hear a lot of folks talking about what Senator Sanders said. I don't know. I would say, and I don't want to speak for the American public, I would say the bulk of the country, whether they're pro-life or pro-choice, would say, well, it's one thing if our tax dollars pay for abortions of U.S. citizens. It's a whole nother thing that we become the spender of the world and an abortion provider of the world and paying for abortions all across the globe. Does that bother anybody else? You see, when you put our two stances next to each other, one of them is extreme. And it leans toward death. One of them is extreme and it leans toward life. So let's say we're cautious And if we believe it's a life, maybe we should protect that life. That seems like a rational thought process of, look, you know, maybe right now, I don't know. Is it a baby? Is it a fetus? Is it a clump of cells? Is it a blob of tissue? I don't know. But what I do know is my mama gave birth to me. So what I do know is at some point, I guess I was that blob of tissue, right? I mean, at some point I was that clump of cells. And look at me now. I'm grown. I'm walking around. So a rational way of looking at that is saying, well, I mean, the only difference between me now and me then is proximity. I'm no longer inside of a womb. I'm out. So if we use that rational thought, which 2019 we don't have much of, but let's say we look at that from a logical, rational standpoint. Oh, I don't know. I don't know. Is it life? Is it not? Well, we all know where we started. And we all started in the womb. And it's interesting to me, they're having a climate change town hall because they celebrate science. Science is the number one indicator. The scientists all agree. But yet they ignore science that says life begins at conception. They ignore science that says babies feel pain. They ignore science that says baby can survive outside of the womb at 24 weeks. They ignore that science because it's convenient. We'll talk more when we come back. So the conversation continues on life and hope. And so as we looked at last segment, Senator Sanders had some comments to make about abortion and climate change and their connection and population growth. Look, this is not a new stance. This has been the stance for a long time. You can go read Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood. You can go read what she was doing early on, what the leaders of Planned Parenthood was doing, even back in the late 60s, early 70s. Look, the mindset has been there are certain groups, there are certain populations on this planet that do not need to have children. So there's forced sterilizations. There's a sense of they need access to unlimited abortion on demand. Why? Because we don't want them to populate. That is the mindset of some people. And that's so extreme. I'm reading a book right now, or actually listening to it. It bothers me when people say they're reading something when they're listening to it via Audible. And so I'm not reading it. I'm listening to it. But it's a book about a prisoner that was in Auschwitz. And so he was in a death camp. And the process of him, he voluntarily went into camp. Because he wanted to see, because they had an underground force and they wanted to see what was going on behind those doors. He stayed in that camp for 2 years and then escaped, and he couldn't get anybody to see, anybody to understand what was happening. And what was happening was an extermination of a population, a specific population, for no other reason except because they were Jewish. And he couldn't get people to see. And so we see that happened years ago. And we go, evil is among us. And humanity is an amazing, amazing thing. But because of Genesis 3, because of the fall, humanity can go in the wrong direction. And we can justify a lot of things. And when you are a senator and you stand in front of millions of people on camera and you say, it is okay. Because of climate or because of anything, it is okay to end the lives of human beings. Folks, that's not a slippery slope. That is we've already went down the slope. That's a problem. Because we need to curb the population growth. But it doesn't stop there. The extremism continues with You may have heard of him. He's called Mayor Pete. He's from South Bend, Indiana. And he's running for president as well. And he was asked about when human life begins. And so let's see what Mayor Pete had to say. He said, pro-life people hold everybody in line with this one piece of doctrine about abortion, which is obviously a tough issue for a lot of people to think through morally. Then again, there's a lot of parts of the Bible that talks about how life begins with breath. Even that is something that we can interpret differently. No matter what you think about the cosmic question of how life begins, most Americans can get on board with the idea of, quote, I might draw the line here, you might draw the line there, end quote. The most important thing is the person who should be drawing the line is the woman making the decision. That is what Mayor Pete believes. And so he's making an argument that life begins at breath. So let me pose this question for you. I believe life begins at conception. Some people call me extreme for that. Here we have someone seeking the highest office in the land saying that life begins at breath. Is that not an extreme? If life begins at breath, so that would mean life begins when baby comes out of the womb, when baby is delivered, when baby is smacked on the back a couple times and starts breathing, when that first cry comes out of that baby's mouth. That's when he would argue life begins. And the audacity to conflate that with the Lord breathing life into man in the Garden of Eden. And to say that that's the same thing is, you want to talk about science denying. A baby at 26 weeks is already practicing breathing. Why? Because it knows just a little bit it's going to be out. A baby at 26 weeks has already grown its eyelashes, starting to blink. His eyes have formed. The brain is firing. A baby at 26 weeks in the womb is picking up on the accent of his mom or dad. So, for instance, our children knew, hey, they didn't know this, I guess, per se, but there was no doubt their parents were Southerners. The accent's there. Science has proven that. That's why when babies, they don't know everybody, but what do they know? They know if somebody's holding them and it ain't their mom or dad and they hear that mom's voice, what do? They look up. Why? Because they've been hearing that voice for months. You see, we can get in front of the camera and we can have town halls and we can have meetings and we can have our debates. And we can think that we are the be-all, end-all to these issues. But these candidates, and not just candidates, but sitting senators, sitting congressmen, president, these folks need to see what actually is going on. Because when you make the argument and try to use the Bible to make the argument that life begins at breath, Well, you've completely thrown everything out the window at that point. So not only are you for abortion in the earliest stage of pregnancy, but, I mean, I've been on this show multiple weeks and multiple months ago saying, we have some folks that are saying that even after baby's born, we're going to make them comfortable. We have a bill right now in Washington, D.C. that they refuse to even hear and vote on, that simply says if a baby survives a botched abortion, that baby deserves protections under the law. And we're told we're crazy. That never happens. Of course we're going to protect the baby if it survives. That's what I'm told. I'm told all the time, you're making up arguments. We would never let a surviving baby out of the womb simply die. Well, you just have a guy running for the highest office in the land telling me that life begins at breath. So what's to say that that doesn't then turn into life begins when they leave the hospital? Well, life begins, you know, up until that first birthday, it's kind of up in the air. We need to, you know, kick the tires, see if we want this thing or not. That's not a huge jump. And the reason I was bringing up the comments about what a baby is doing at 26 weeks in pregnancy is because the AP ran a story today talking about women that were getting abortions after 20 weeks, so late term. And the AP was running it and saying, you know, this is, women are having to go across state lines to get these abortions because of all the restrictions in certain states across the country. And even still, they, if they wait till past 28 weeks, it's even tougher for them. You know the video the AP posted? You know why the girl wanted an abortion at 26 weeks? You think it was because she was raped? Or because of the life of the mother? No. She just didn't want a child. She didn't realize she was pregnant. Found out she was pregnant 26 weeks and wanted to end that life. You see, some folks would, even on in the abortion industry, would say it's a tough choice, it's a horrible choice. But it's a choice nonetheless that should be left up to a woman and her doctor. Here's my question. If it's not a life, and if life doesn't begin till breath, why is it a tough choice? Why is it a struggle? Why do we have post-abortive ministries all over this country that are dealing with the ramifications of abortion? If it's not a life, why is it such a tough choice? If it's not a life, why do we have adoption agencies? If it's not a life, why when you go to the doctor and you're pregnant, why does the doctor say, I need to know if you're pregnant before I prescribe you any medicine? If it's not a life, why does Dollywood say, if you're pregnant, you can't ride this ride? It's not a life after all. What's it matter? You see, even our language says that it's a life. If it's not a life, how come when a woman is hit by a car and she's pregnant, somebody may be charged with double murder? It's not a life. We'll talk more when we come back. You know your life. Keep on lifting higher, higher and higher. I said your life. Keep on lifting higher and higher. That's good. That's what we need. We need love to be lifted higher and higher. And I think the producer understands that. And so I thank you for that. As we continue the conversation, look, I'll just quickly close up what I was saying before the last break. We cannot, like, language matters. Okay? So when we hear folks say, look, it's a horrible choice, it's a tough choice, nobody wants to make that choice, no one's pro-abortion. We hear those things, right? We hear that language. The immediate question back has to be, well, why is it a horrible choice? Why should it be safe, legal, and rare? I'm not following. If it's not a life, an individual, unique human being, what's the problem? Well, see, when you ask that question, it exposes a lot of things. It kind of pulls the curtain back on the issue. Because folks, they know that it's a life. We all know that it's a life. And we know it is because, like I said earlier, we used to be in the womb. I mean, goodness gracious, this is as simplistic and as logical and rational as we can get. That is where we began. So even if you're listening to this argument and you're going, look, I don't even believe in God. I don't believe in who you claim to be is the God of the universe. Even so, where'd you start? Where'd you start? Was it a sperm and an egg? And then you grew in a womb? Is that where you started? It is, isn't it? Yeah, of course it is. Why do we have laws on the books in certain places in the country where you cannot slaughter a pregnant cow? Why? Because there's a clump of tissues inside of her? No, because there is a baby cow or calf inside of her. Why do we have laws on the books that say you cannot execute a pregnant woman? Because there's two lives involved. You see the hypocrisy there? Like, do you see the problem with that? Like, we have to be at a place where we're willing to have those type of discussions and ask those hard questions. Okay, Mayor Pete, if you believe it's a horrible choice, then explain to me why it's a horrible choice. Is it because there's a life being ended? Because as we've said on this show multiple times, what is the focus? What is the goal of every abortion? Tell me. How do you know if it's been a successful abortion? Well, it's because a life ended. Well, how do you know it's been a botched abortion? Because the baby survived. That's why it's called a botched abortion. It did not succeed with its ultimate outcome. You see, language is important. We've had language around for a long time to explain things. And we know it. And so when AP ran that story and saying women need to get abortions in the latest of stages, it wasn't from the premise of because of their life was in danger. It wasn't in the premise of because the baby's life was in danger. It wasn't in the premise of, well, because they were raped or because of incest. No, it was in the premise of, well, because she wants to get rid of the baby. And that should be enough. And here's a little secret for you. The reason they're doing it from that premise is because the amount of folks that have abortions because of rape, life of the mother, or incest is less than 1%. Do you know that even, I believe I have this right, even women that are raped and conceive, very few of those even have abortions. Most of them carry the child to term. Of course, you don't see that in the news. And so those are the things that we have to talk about. Those are the questions we have to ask. And we need to be concerned that there is a growing number of political leaders that have made their platform when it comes to abortion the most extreme. Like, their platform on abortion is like China level extreme. It's like North Korea level extreme. Like, my follow-up question to Senator Sanders would have been, so how do you feel about the one-child law in China and forced abortions? Are you good with that? It sounds like you are. But, of course, we didn't get that follow-up. Because he's playing into the hands of the overarching narrative. Folks, we have a responsibility as gospel people to stand up for life. To do that boldly, unapologetically, and in any opportunity we get. Now, we're to do that lovingly, sure, certainly. Yeah, there's no doubt about that. But we don't water down the truth. This is why I do this show every single week. It's why I get up every day and go to work at Hope. It's because a generation has been aborted. This past week, I was at the CareNet conference. Between 1,500, 2,000 people in attendance. I led a workshop on partnering with pregnancy centers, partnering with the church. I was able to have dinner with the president of CareNet and have good conversations with him. I was able to meet with a lot of folks from all across the country. And every time I go to these conferences, they have people stand up and they give awards to those that have been doing this work for 15 years, for 30 years. I've been on this planet for 35 years, and there are people in that room at that conference that have been fighting the fight of the pro-life movement since before I was born. I spoke in my workshop about feeling as if, you've heard the phrase, standing on the shoulders of giants. Feeling as if, as someone that's been in this work for 4.5 years, coming to that and saying, look, I want to be engaged. I want to be a part of this. And looking around and seeing people that have done this for 15, 30, 35 years. And looking at them in their eye and saying, we are standing on your shoulders. and saying that this is worth it. That the lives of the unborn are worth it. And for a woman in the crowd while I'm talking to say, we tried. I mean, think about that. And you know what she's going to do? She's going to go back home. She's going to get in her car this morning. And she's going to drive to work. She's going to open the door. She's going to turn the lights on in the exam rooms. And she's going to serve those women as they walk in. Just like she's done for 15, for 30 years. So when the question comes, why is this the issue that gets you so riled up? Why is this the issue? Folks, this is the defining issue. I told you that I'm listening to that book about Auschwitz and the Nazis and the extermination of the Jews. And I talked to someone that's from Germany and they said, or I talked to someone that has a friend in Germany. And they said that was the defining issue. They look at everything through that lens. Every decision they make now from a governmental standpoint is made through the lens of, at one point, we were so evil that we didn't see our Jewish neighbors as neighbors. We saw them as experiments or weeds that needed to be eradicated. And there will be a day, shame on us, where the history books will look back at this time from 1973 up to now and go, wow. Wow, y'all allowed that to happen. They're going to say things like, the science was clear. You knew what was in the womb. Ultrasound showed us what was going on. And you just went to your ball games. You didn't pay attention. They're going to look back and go, hold on, there was a guy that campaigned on population control? There's a guy that said that life begins at breath? Look, the fight is worth it. It's worth it. And if I could encourage you, being at that meeting last week with all those folks, man, it's so uplifting to know that there are thousands of people going back to their hometowns, going back to where they live, and going to open up doors today and every day to serve the women in their city, to provide much-needed material assistance to women and babies, to get the gospel to these folks, and the kingdom will expand. Image bearers loved. It's happening. Not just here in Knoxville, but across the country and across the globe. And so we're not able to do any of that without your partnership, and we are grateful for that as well. Whether that's by listening to this broadcast every week, or it's by partnering with us financially, or providing food, or decorations, or gifts for baby showers, all of those things. It's worth it. It's worth it. And that woman, while I was talking to it, that cried out, we've tried. We've tried. One day her work's not going to be done in vain. I know that. And one day we'll see a world where abortion is unthinkable, either on this side or the other. And we long for that day. We'll be back. So we didn't even work this out. And if any of my friends that know me know that my favorite holiday is not even close, it's Christmas time. I've been playing Christmas music already in my office. And boom, the producer lays out bumper music that is Christmas music. And it's Drummer Boy, which is Perfect. Thank you for that. And so it is never too early. And for those of you traditionalists, like, oh, you got to wait till, you know, Thanksgiving, whatever. You'll play. I'm sorry. I celebrate Christ's birth year round. And so if you don't want to do that, I'm kidding. I mean, I do, but it's good stuff. So appreciate that song. Hopefully today's conversation has been fruitful and productive and kind of opened your eyes to some of the goings-ons around the country and the rhetoric and the narrative that seems to be pushed. And as we see those narratives kind of be shaped and formed, and we see the extremism that we're tending to see here as of late when it comes to the issue of abortion, what I would encourage you to do when you are having these conversations, when it comes up in conversation, I'm not saying go be that person that just seeks out people to start arguments with. I'm not saying that at all. But what I am saying is when these conversations arise, how are we answering them? How are we posing questions? What are we doing with it? Look, if we just see this plainly as an issue, then yeah, it's not a horrible choice. It's not that tough. If we just see this as an issue, the issue of abortion or the issue of life, if we just see it as an issue, then yeah, it's simple. It's not going to keep you up at night. Issues don't keep you up at night. But you know what does? People, image bearers, human beings. That's what keeps me up at night. So see, this isn't a issue-driven conversation. This is a people-driven conversation. From a biblical standpoint, from a biblical worldview, this is a gospel-driven conversation. So when Jesus said, you are to first love your God with all your heart and soul, and then the second is like it, love your neighbor. Folks, that includes the neighbor across the street and the baby in the womb. It's that simple. So when we start seeing this as people and not issues, we may change our tune. We may change our conversation a little bit. When AP ran that story today that said women should be able to get abortions when they're pregnant at 26 weeks, somebody retweeted it. You know what they said? I was born at 26 weeks. That changes it a little bit, right? And then if you go look at that tweet thread, you just see person after person posting pictures of their babies that were born at 26 weeks. Now, why are they doing that? Because it's possible. And so when we throw these things around, like women should be able to get abortions at this time or that time, or rape, incest, life of the mother, there are people out there that are going, hold on, I was a product of that. And someone gave me an opportunity at life. Are you saying that my life is less valuable than another life? When we talk about ridding, quote unquote, ridding the population of Down syndrome, that's not because they found some kind of cure. It's because they're aborting those babies. That's not an issue. That's about people. And so what we have to come to grips with is every individual we come in contact with is a unique individual, never before created and never will be created again. Do you understand that? After our first child was born, my wife had a miscarriage. That was a baby with life that was never created before and will never be created again. When Summer, my second child, my third child was born, they didn't take the place of that child that was we had a miscarriage. It wasn't as if, oh, well, now this child is born. No, it was a different, unique individual. Never before created, never to be created again. When we start looking at folks in that frame of view, it changes the way we talk about these issues. Because we start seeing them more than just issues, political pawns for our narrative. We start seeing these folks as actual image bearers. That's who we are to see them as. Look, there's a number of reasons why I'm pro-life, even outside of the gospel. But I'm here to tell you that the number one reason is because the gospel compels me to be. Life is a gift. And what a gift it is to be able to serve at Hope Resource Center, where every single day we get an opportunity to look image bearers in their eye and celebrate life with them. Walk through that messiness and the brokenness with them. And you know what we find on the other side? Most of the time, 86% that see an ultrasound, that see life in their womb, choose to carry that child to term. Celebrate that today. That's encouraging, and you make those things happen. We'll talk to you next week. Higher and higher.